the best trading opportunity? Stock indexes, futures, Forex? Correct. All of them. So trade them all using Nadex binary options and spreads with limited risk guaranteed. Nadex.com, the future of trading. Trading on Nadex involves risk and may not be appropriate for all investors.
My mission is simple, to make you money. I'm here to level the playing field for all investors. There's always a bull market somewhere, and I promise to help you find it. Mad Money starts now.
Hey, I'm Cramer. Welcome to Mad Money. Welcome to Cramerica. Other people want to make friends. I'm just trying to make you some money. My job, not just to entertain, but to educate you. So call me at 1-800-743-CBC or tweet me at Jim Cramer. Don't make the mistake of trying to outthink this market. We know that on any given day, the action is pretty much ruled by the commodity of oil, including today, where the Dow sank 131 points, S&P shed 0.57%, and NASDAQ lost 0.63% because oil got hammered. Well, what makes this pattern so crazy is that oil itself is stuck in a seemingly endless spin cycle. Whenever the price of crude falls to the low 40s, as it did last week, the big petroleum-producing countries like Saudi Arabia, Venezuela, Iran, Russia, routinely try to manipulate it back upward. And they always succeed by claiming there might be a freeze or a cutback in production. Oil then spikes to the mid-40s on those rumors, taking the stock market up with it. Then we learn that these petrostates probably can't come to any kind of agreement like we did today, exactly when the Saudis said expect nothing to come of next week's Wednesday's OPEC meeting. And oil gives up the ghost, dragging the stock market lower. Again, exactly what played out. Once again, if it gets low enough, the rumors will start and we'll rinse and repeat. Do you know that this is now the sixth time we've been through this oil charade in 2016? So shame on anyone who perpetuated it. Shame on you. At least now you've been warned, though. With that in mind, let's go to next week's game plan because it's chock full of earnings that will likely impact stocks because the Fed just agreed to keep rates steady, even as a host of these Fed gas bags will be speaking next week. And each one's opinion will be taken as gospel. Another charade that we should be ashamed of ourselves for buying into. Not all Federal Reserve officials are created equal. Only Janet Yellen, who speaks on Thursday, even matters. Monday morning, we have some earnings irony to talk about. When we get the results from Carnival and Vail Resorts, although neither company will say it on their calls or even be asked about it, frankly, these two stories revolve around the Zika virus. I bet the cruise line that is Carnival's bookings will be hurt by Zika until the health authorities get it under control, because they may have too much Caribbean business. On the other hand, I think Vail benefits from Zika because rich people are going to avoid warmer climes. And Vail's resort is at 8,200 feet, important given that the Zika-carrying mosquito cannot live above 6,500 feet. Yep, Vail's Zika-free. Call it attitude versus altitude, and the latter wins. After the close Monday, one of our favorite companies reports Thor Industries. Thor! That's right. The phenomenally successful maker of recreational vehicles, which came on the show recently. The stock's less than 2 points off its high, so I don't know how much more it can jump. However, I'd buy some both before and after the report. Why? Because there's a growing secular, doesn't mean the economy has to get better for it to happen, secular trend toward camping and going cross-country in these vehicles. And Thor's the biggest and best player. Monday night, we get the presidential debate, which will be covered by CNBC. I don't think anything positive is going to come out of it for business. If anything, we're liable to hear about the banks, thanks to Wells Fargo, and the drug companies, thanks to Mylan. I say, thanks for nothing. Oh, boy, Tuesday's got some real controversy to it, because after the close, Nike reports. Let me tell you, the analysts' long knives are really out for this one all of a sudden. And that's chiefly because Adidas, which had pretty much stopped competing with Nike, is now back and back with a vengeance. And Under Armour's making some solid inroads, too. Not only that, but Finish Line, the shoe retailer, reported today and told a story of tougher comparisons ahead. The only thing that Nike stock seems to have going for it is how much it's intensely disliked by Wall Street. I am a huge believer in CEO Mark Parker and the Nike team, and I'd rather bet with them than bet against them. You disagree with me? Go read Shoe Dog. You'll know why I feel this way. That's Phil Knight's biography. We also have two, I guess you call it an autobiography. We also have two important analyst meetings on Tuesday. Listen, these are really interesting. Workday, that's a cloud-based provider of human capital financial reporting software, and Jabil Circuit, a contract manufacturer, are going to throw analyst days. When Oracle reported last week, it took a ton of shots at Workday, saying it was really crushing these guys, winning a lot of business from them. You know what? I want to hear what Workday has to say, because they, unlike Oracle, had a blowout quarter. They've got bragging rights. J-Bill reported a disappointing quarter earlier this week, so there's really not much going to be new at the meeting. But get this. The analysts know that J-Bill makes phones for Apple, so they'll try a gazillion ways to get a read on the iPhone 7, which you know I think is selling strongly. J-Bill won't tell them directly, but they'll get some clues, and I'll give them right to you. Wednesday, we got one steady Eddie name and a couple of wild cards. Before the opening, we get to hear from Cramer Fave Paychex, the payroll processor. Stock's up 13% this year. I think it's going to put up a good number. But then we hear from BlackBerry before the open and Pier 1 after the close, and both companies are floundering. BlackBerry's always supposed to be turning around, but it never seems to. Pier 1 just fired its CEO. We're talking about a new strategy. I want to hear about that strategy because, you know, Pier 1's the only home goods story that's not doing well here. And at $4, maybe a bargain. Wednesday's also the day of the so-called great cut production freeze OPEC meeting. Yeah, the meeting was supposed to produce production cutbacks that we learned today won't happen. I think oil will wilt going into the confab, and it might have a tough week given that none of these countries wants to cut back production, really. They'll lose share to America. Thursday, we get results from two companies owned by my charitable trust, PepsiCo and Costco. And we've been telling people in our ActionAlertsPlus.com club that PepsiCo should turn in still one more great quarter, but Costco's got some food deflation issues that might nick the numbers. I would buy either company on weakness after they report. They're both fabulous, well-run businesses with stocks that have been as terrific as their managements. Here's another one that I like, but it was disappointing last time, Accenture. I think that last quarter was a rare miss for this information technology consulting company. I bet they won't miss again. I bet that Accenture puts up a good performance. We also have an analyst meeting being thrown by Celgene. This could be very fascinating because we're going to find, maybe we'll get a good read on what Receptos, the biotech company they bought last year, is doing for them, particularly in the ulcerative colitis market. I also want to know why I keep hearing that Celgene is trying to acquire more big companies. Why do they need to do that if things are going so well? I'm going to report back to you on this. After the close on Thursday, Janet Yellen speaks, and we know that her every word will be parsed for new clues about Fed policy. Remember, though, we're in a Fed-free zone in Cramerica until the next meeting, because there's nothing of consequence that could have occurred since the meeting took place earlier this week. Finally, on Friday, we hear from McCormick, the spice company. By the way, I have Dixon. I know he was listed as doubtful. He's not out anymore. You can still get Dixon in many single fantasy leagues. Probably not appropriate, but I put it out there. Now, we all know that the packaged goods players are straining under pricing pressure, and I'm sure McCormick isn't immune. However, it's down $10 from its high in July, and if the stock gets slugged going into the quarter, perhaps if Conagra, which reports on Thursday, gives you a miss, or Costco takes down numbers also on food, you might get a great trading opportunity to buy some McCormick, the maker of Old Bay seasoning. One other report to watch for on Friday, and this is a very important report. The Chinese manufacturing and non-manufacturing PMIs. You know we're getting bullish on China. Do you know the copper started moving up? The Baltic Dry Freight Index, is ramping. Auto sales in August were white hot in China. And this week we got some stronger Asian numbers from one of my favorites, Caterpillar. If we get better reports out of China and the dollar stays calm against other currencies, we're going to come in into October with a head of steam that could create a very positive backdrop for many of our big international stocks. So here's the bottom line. Next week marks the end of September, historically the weakest month of the 12. Right now, the market's gotten through pretty much everything that's been thrown at it. Go back and look into the verbiage going into this month. Lots of scare talk. Just remember how that turned out. Because in October, we've had a history of crashes, even though ultimately the month's been a good one. But be prepared to be scared again by the same naysayers. And my advice, get over it. Look for cheap stocks of great companies and use the fear to buy, not to sell. Can I go to James in Utah, please? James!
Hey, Cramer. Thanks for all you do for us home gamers.
Appreciate it.
Lending Tree had a really nice run-up after appearing on Mad Money and reporting Q2 earnings, but it's pulled back from those August highs. Has the fundamental story changed in this name with Wells Fargo, the Fed, and slowing mortgage applications?
No, and I'm glad you pointed out that it went up because, you know, Doug Lebda came on. He told a really good story, and we were both marveling at the stock had fallen so much and that it really was pressure from shorts. And the stock had a big run, exactly as you pointed out, and it's come back a little on profit-taking, and I think that it is a
buy, not a sell.
Hey, why don't we go to Karen in Connecticut? Karen!
Hey, Jim. How are you?
I could not be better, Karen. How about you?
I'm fine. I'm just a little confused about Schlumberger. the contract between them and the Venezuelan
company, it was an oddity. Yeah, Karen's on to something. There was, you know, because Schlumberger pulled out of Venezuela, but there they were doing business again. I bet you they got the cash up front, frankly. Schlumberger is a core holding for ActionAlertsPlus.com, and we were itching to pull the trigger on buying a little more. Just needed to come down. Don't want to ruin our basis. That's what I don't like to do. But Schlumberger, Karen, I think you're going to be terrific in it. Can I take a commercial break? All right, so anyway, we've almost made it to October. Boo! Don't let fear-mongering scare you away from buying cheap stocks of great companies. On Mad Money Tonight, Brad and Angelina may have shocked the world with their breakup. But if HP Inc. is any indication, sometimes splitting up is the best. I'll tell you why the company could start printing profits. That Ulta's latest quarter may seem to have been ugly, at least to this market, but is there beauty beneath the surface? I'm investigating. And my conversation with Lululemon CEO continues. Don't miss my sweat session with the CEO. Stick with Kramer.
Don't miss a second of Mad Money. Follow at Jim Cramer on Twitter. Have a question? Tweet Cramer. Hashtag mad tweets. Send Jim an email to madmoney@cnbc.com or give us a call at 1-800-743-CNBC. Miss something? Head to madmoney.cnbc.com.
When the old Hewlett-Packard broke itself up nearly a year ago, it seemed obvious that the HP enterprise, the higher growth business focused on networking, storage, servers, software, services, would be the big winner. While HP Inc., which got the slower printing and personal computer business, was a cast-off, not even worth bothering with, thanks to the seemingly unstoppable decline of the personal computer. On the first point, there's no doubt Hewlett-Packard Enterprise, which I've been recommending all along, it's been a huge success. With its stock up more than 55% since the split, driven by a very capable management team and some savvy deal-making. But HP Inc., it surprised us. While the PC and printing stock initially got beaten to a pulp, falling roughly 25% in its first 3 months as a separate company, since then it has made a miraculous comeback. At this point, HP Inc. is now up about 22% since the breakup, and it's rebounded more than 65% from the market-wide bottom in February. Now, a great deal of the run here has to do with the fact that HP Inc. declined to levels where it was too attractive to ignore as a value play, especially considering that even after its rebound, the stock still sports an attractive 3.3% dividend yield. But I think it could have more room to run. That's right, despite its reputation as a challenged company that's operating in secularly declining end markets, I'm seeing signs that both the PC and printing businesses could be making a comeback here, which would give HP Inc. a fabulous boost. How on earth is that possible? How can the PC be on the rebound after virtually everyone had written off computers as a steadily shrinking industry that simply can't compete in a world where consumers are abandoning their desktop for mobile devices in droves? How could a commodity business like printers be a source of growth? Have I lost my mind? Is this some sort of kind of like bizarre prank? I think the improbable comeback of HP Inc., along with its end markets, is very real. And let me tell you why. Let's start with the supposedly moribund personal computer space. After growing steadily for years, global PC shipments peaked in 2011, around the time that tablets started becoming ubiquitous. From 2011 through 2015, PC shipments fell from 365 million down to 288 million. That's shrinking steadily, including an 8% decline last year. Now, in the first quarter of 2016, we saw an 11.5% decline in worldwide PC shipments. Hideous. Although in the U.S., they were only down 5.8%. However,
By the second quarter, the numbers start looking a lot less terrible, with worldwide PC shipments falling by only 4.5%. U.S. numbers actually rising by 4.9%. That's a major change for the better. Oh, and it certainly doesn't hurt that Intel raised its forecast dramatically just last Friday, saying they see signs of that, I'm going to quote here, improving PC demand, end quote. Intel, of course, would know it dominates the PC chip market. How about printers, the other key part of HP Inc.'s business? This is another area that's widely seen as being in secular decline because with the proliferation of mobile devices, there's much less need to actually copy hard, print any hard copies at all. I mean, you can just look at them on your phone or your tablet. So from 2013 to 2015, we saw modest but steady declines in global printer sales. Again, though, just like with the PC, after an ugly first quarter, the second quarter of 2016 is looking a lot better for the printing business. In the first quarter, worldwide printing shipments declined by 10.6%. In the second quarter, they were down just 3.8%. That doesn't mean the printer market is suddenly going back into growth mode, but it's declining less than it used to. And that's still a big deal for a company like HP Inc. And speaking of HP Inc., how have things looked for them specifically? In the most recent quarter, the company's PC sales were basically flat. They increased by 0.1%. I know. Doesn't sound that big, but listen to me. That was a vast improvement versus the previous quarter, where they were down 9.9%, or the one before that, down 12.8%, or the one before that, down 14%. You see the pattern? This represents the first positive result for HP computer business in six quarters. So there's some reason to be optimistic here, especially when you consider that this segment represents 63% of the company's total revenue. Plus, they're very clearly taking share here. Just in the last quarter, the company's global market share grew by 160 basis points. On the printer side of things, HP Inc. is still
the house of pain.
Printer sales down 14.3% in the latest quarter, the fourth straight quarter of double-digit declines. That said, the declines have gotten marginally smaller over the past 6 months. More importantly, on Monday of last week, it's something that no one even cared about, which is quite wrong. We learned that HP Inc. is buying Samsung's printer business for $1.05 billion. That might not sound like much of a needle mover for a $25 billion company, but printers are basically a commodity product that's in secular decline. By snapping up Samsung's printing division, HP is taking out a competitor, which matters even more than all the cost synergies from the deal. Less competition means better pricing. At the same time, Samsung's acquisition also helps HP Inc. disrupt the $55 billion copy market, the copier business, by rolling out superior multifunction printing devices that can replace old school Xerox machines. One more point about printers. HP Inc. has some exposure, and it's growing, to the 3D printing market. Now, I view this as an entirely lottery ticket. None of the pure play 3D printing companies has consistently been profitable. But if somebody finally gets this technology right, and I'm talking about industrial 3D printing, it could be a game changer. Given its scale, HP Inc. might just be able to turn 3D printing into a new growth driver that would cause investors to pay a substantially higher price earnings multiple for the stock because it's got great growth. But again, no guarantee that'll happen. It's just a kind of let's consider an added bonus that might come your way if things go well. Hence, I'm calling it a lottery ticket. Put it all together, and I think you got a really good case for owning HP Inc. But why am I only mentioning this now? Well, part of it's that Samsung deal from last week. Part of it's Intel's bullish commentary from the PC. And much of it, I hate to admit, is the Fed. HP Inc. has a 3.3% yield, which makes this exactly the kind of dividend stock that tends to perform well when the Fed keeps rates low, as we know they're doing as of Wednesday. As long as the Fed doesn't tighten, people will keep owning HP Inc. as a bond market equivalent name. So let me give you the bottom line here. Believe it or not, things seem to be improving in the personal computer space, which means HP Inc. could be a very attractive buy, even after its recent run. And as for the printing business, the company's purchase of Samsung's printer division should help them consolidate and reduce competition in a tough market. At the end of the day, HP Inc. is still darn cheap, trading at 9.4 times next year's earnings estimates. You know, that's about half the market multiple, which means any improvement could propel this stock higher with only minimal downside, given the outsized dividend that's more than covered by the company's bountiful cash flow. Much more Mad Money ahead. Ulta, yeah, Ulta may have lost its momentum as of late, but can the company win the beauty battle? I'm taking a closer look at their latest decline. Then Lululemon shares have taken a tumble this month, but I'm talking with the CEO to find out if he can get that stock to regain its balance and stretch higher. And with some of the tech industry's most prominent companies reportedly interested, I'm going to give you my take on the story that my colleague David Faber broke today. Twitter takeover. Stick Kramer. What do you do when a high-flying momentum stock suddenly seems to fall out of favor in the Wall Street fashion show, but for no discernible reason? What should consider the very confusing case of longtime Kramer fave Ulta Salon? The largest beauty retailer in the United States sells a combination of cosmetics and salon services through more than 900 locations. Until very recently, Ulta's stock was one of the hottest out there. That's why its shares have doubled over the past 2 years, not to mention being up 28% for 2016. Under the leadership of super CEO Mary Dillon, Ulta became one of the best performing retailers out there, perhaps even the absolute best when I consider my whole universe that I study, delivering quarter after quarter of phenomenal same-store sales growth and magnificent earnings. It seemed like Dillon had figured out the magic formula to prospering in an environment where the Internet and Amazon in particular have been putting most bricks and mortar retailers through the meat grinder.
The House of Pain.
How did she do it? She made Ulta into more than just a store. It's a salon that also sells makeup, which is a brilliant model because no matter how many other industries Amazon decimates, they'll never be able to cut your hair or give you highlights or extensions or a perm or a dye job over the web. You need to physically go to a salon if you want to get your hairstyle. And while you're there, you might as well put on some makeup and other experience that can't really be duplicated online. And, of course, we need makeup because everybody just takes selfies all the time and Instagram. You can't walk out of the house anymore. It was a great long-term story. But then near the end of August, Ulta reported a seemingly excellent quarter. I mean, really. And yet the stock stumbled 6% the same day. It fell from $271 to $254. Do you know what? Since then, it's continued to get hammered. Now sinking to $237 as of today. This is down more than 12% in less than a month. This is Ulta Salon. So what the heck happened here? Were the results somehow terrible under the surface and we couldn't tell? Not exactly. When Ulta reported a month ago, they delivered $1.43 of earnings per share. That was a 3-cent beat. Represented a 24% increase year over year. That's excellent. Company's revenue came in a little higher than expected, too, rising nearly 22% year over year. Okay. That doesn't look like a disappointment at all. Actually seems pretty darn strong. Perhaps there was something going on underneath the headline numbers that was really miserable, something that can explain why the market suddenly turned on Ulta? Nope, nada. Company delivered same-store sales growth 14.4%, a truly magnificent number. And the gross margin, what they make after the cost of sales, it increased by 110 basis points year over year. I mean, I've got to tell you, every metric I just gave you is...
House of Pleasure.
Okay, if the quarter Ulta just reported was in reality quite so good, then what the heck? Maybe it was the guidance. Maybe something was wrong with the guidance? After all, Wall Street cares more about the future than the past. So a strong quarter paired with a weak forecast... almost always leads to a sell-off. But Ulta gave robust guidance for the next quarter. Imagine predicting same-store sales to grow in the 11 to 13% range. That is the best in retail. Confused yet? All right, let me lay it out for you. When viewed in a vacuum, Ulta Salon's most recent quarter was simply fabulous. Virtually any other retailer would completely and utterly kill for those numbers. However, we don't judge stocks in a vacuum. Not at all. Just the opposite. The problem with Ulta's results, the reason why its stock has been tumbling almost nonstop since it reported, is all about context. Put simply, Ulta's numbers may have been great, but they weren't great enough versus the lofty expectations of so many investors, expectations that were raised by the company's incredible track record. In other words, Ulta delivered what I regard as being a small top and bottom line beat when people were anticipating a huge beat with substantially boosted guidance. The reason? Because that's exactly what the company has been doing quarter after quarter for two straight years. Just listen to some of these numbers, you'll know exactly what I'm talking about. Over the previous four quarters, Ulta's revenue came in anywhere from 2 to 4% higher than what the analysts were expecting. But a month ago, they only gave us a 0.9% revenue beat. Pretty good in absolute terms, but the market had gotten used to Ulta beating numbers by a gigantic margin. Not many other companies are held to this kind of standard. I know it seems very unfair, but then again, Ulta stock had run up dramatically going into the quarter. Many people owned it because they thought these gigantic beats could go on as far as the eye could see. And look, it's the same for every other metric. On the earnings front, Ulta's numbers came in at 2.9% higher than expected, but over the previous three quarters, they beat the estimates by anywhere from 5.7 to 12.4%. Once again, Ulta gets penalized for not beating the estimates by enough. When you blow away the numbers for three straight quarters, the analysts start to get embarrassed, so they raise their estimates substantially, making it much harder for any company to keep delivering such gigantic earnings beats. But does that mean this was a disappointing quarter? Hardly. Ulta's 14.4% same-store sales growth was 160 basis points higher than what the analysts predicted. And that is really good. But over the previous three quarters, their same-store sales came in at 310 to 460 basis points higher. Whoa. So in context, again, not quite good enough. Again, though, the problem here isn't with Ulta Salon, the company. They're delivering. The issue is that the market's been spoiled by Ulta blowing away Wall Street same-store sales estimates over and over and over again by 3 or 4 percentage points, something that's almost unheard of. But look, 14.4% same-store sales growth is enormous, even if it's down slightly from the previous quarter. You'd be hard-pressed to find another retailer with such stellar numbers. Now, the naysayers point to Ulta's guidance for the next quarter, where they're forecasting the 11 to 13% increase as a sign that business is decelerating. But let's remember that Mary Dillon has a long history of under-promising and over-delivering. Put it all together, and you can understand what's happening here. Ulta's stock has been slammed because going into the quarter, far too many shareholders assumed that the company could be beating the numbers by epic proportions forever. This time around, though, that didn't happen. Not because Ulta's doing worse than we thought. They are in great shape. But because the analysts finally stopped underestimating Mary Dillon and Ulta Salon. So what do we do now? Well, if you listened to the conference call like I did, you heard about the continued strength in cosmetics, a rapidly expanding loyalty program with 20 million members, an explosive e-commerce business up nearly 55%, and perhaps most important, Ulta continues to open new stores at a torrid pace. They're well on their way to adding 100 new locations this year. That's an 11% increase. And while the stock's still trading 33 times next year's earnings estimates, even after the recent decline, that's part of the problem, I think that valuation is more than justified because Ulta does have 20% plus long-term growth rate. That level of growth is very hard to find. So let me give you the bottom line here on one of my absolute favorite companies with a stock that's stalling. Eventually, all growth stocks run into the problems of, well, great expectations, Mrs. Haversham. But if the story's intact, they ultimately bounce back. In my view, Ulta Salon is a broken stock, not a broken company. And that's why I think it's worth buying, particularly if it keeps going lower on the same old information. I want some calls. I want to go to Elise in Pennsylvania. Elise.
Hi, how are you, Jim? This is very exciting to talk to you.
Same.
I'd like to know how you feel about CVS. I've always felt it was a good company, and I definitely go into their stores a couple times a week. I've owned the stock for a few years, and I've done very well with it. I did sell part of my position near its high of about 105, but it recently sold off to about 90. And I'm a long-term investor, and a few days ago there was a positive Barron's article that there were continuing opportunities for growth in the future. And I'd like to know what you think.
Elise, I am in agreement with Barron's, which doesn't happen very often. The stock at 90 seems to be too cheap to me. It's come down a great deal. A lot of that is people just have soured on the pharmacy benefit management manager that they have purchased. And it's not the actual same store sales, which are good. I say you stick with it. It's only a few points off its low. How about Anne Marie in New York? Anne Marie.
Hey, Jim. Thanks for taking my call tonight.
Of course.
I'm calling about Skechers. I'm losing my conviction. I don't know if I sell here and cut my losses, if I buy more. I wish they would come on the show and
well,
see what's going on.
You and me both. There were a couple of price cuts and downgrades this week, and what that tells me is we got to wait till the stock has settled if we wanted to buy anymore, Emory. But it's down at 22. I mean, we're now talking about a stock that has reversed and given up so much of its gain. It's down to being only a $3.5 billion company. It's down 27% for the year. But I will say this, it has lost momentum. So my take is it's a hold here.
Don't buy. Don't buy.
But I'd like to hear more about a resale acceleration some point before I change my view to a...
Buy, buy, buy.
All right. Ulta's a victim of its own success. It really is that plain and simple. Nobody can, nobody, not Mary Dill, nobody can live up to those expectations. But this stock is still a thing of poker chip. I'd keep buying. Much more Mad Money ahead. Did you catch my interview with Lululemon CEO last night? If you missed it, don't worry. The conversation continues tonight. And he's sharing how the company has turned fitness into a spectator sport. Then a little bird told me Twitter might be a takeover target. I'm giving my take on the rumors that David Faber turned into a fabulous story this morning and it caused the stock to soar today. And I'm telling you what your next move should be because, boy, there does seem to be heating up in those takeover talks. And all your calls, rapid fire. Tonight's very special Friday edition of the Lightning Round. So stick with Cramer.
Monday, kick off the trading day with Squawk on the Street. Live from Post 9 at the NYSE.
Do you do 10 minutes of deep breathing and all of that?
No one will believe it, but I do.
Really?
Nobody believes it.
No one does.
No one believes it.
No one believes it. It's just that I don't care.
It all starts at 9 a.m. Eastern.
Earlier this month, Lululemon reported a not-so-hot quarter, and since then, the stock has gone into pretty much free fall. However, I think it's too soon to write this one off. Yesterday, I got a chance to speak with Lululemon CEO Laurent Potavant, and he made a compelling case that Lulu needs to be viewed as a lifestyle company, not just a retail play. Now, last night, we only got a chance to show you a part of the interview. People really liked it. So, therefore, I think it's worth seeing the rest, because the stock seems attractive down here and the company has great appeal to me. So take a look. We see a 4% comparable stores number, which is much lower than what many were looking for. But at the same time, you had very difficult comparisons. Why is that comparable store number not a good indicator of the future?
Well, I think think about how the world of transactions has evolved, right? I mean, we've got a very light footprint. We've got amazing locations. And then in the past 2 years, we've built a digital strategy that we didn't have. So it's been a curse and a blessing, but the blessing has been that we've been able to leapfrog, having no legacy, we've been able to leapfrog the industry, and now we're providing incredible digital cover to an incredibly productive fleet. But I'm far more interested in talking about guest acquisition, guest engagement, and how often we see them. And the store happens to be an incredible environment where we can continue to do that really well. So it's certainly not the end of the store, but we've augmented the power of the store.
How did my wife and others know that this is not just for class? Because she wears, I mean, all her friends, everybody wears this not just in class.
Totally. Well, I mean, you know, that's where the power of our educators comes into play, right? And I go right back to the power of our people. And that's why we're relentless about how we invest in our people, their education, and that's why that turnover has been the lowest since 1998.
I'd like to see the men's because, obviously, I'm trying to figure out what to wear myself when I'm not wearing my Brioni or the Zegna.
We've got this exclusive anti-stink technology where we're actually...
Anti-stink. And you're okay with that, right?
That's been your term. And we're okay with that because we know that some of the guys will leave their shirts in the back for two workouts if they didn't have a chance to wash it. But the silver that's being woven into the fabric is actually antibacterial, kills the bacteria, kills the odor, and it's an incredible product.
Now, let's talk about the joint. I mean, is this for show or is there something here?
You know, part of the experience is that you can actually either, as a guy, you can customize your shorts, so whether you want compression or no compression in your liner, 9-inch shorts, 11-inch shorts, so we'll do that right on the fly for you. And for women, you know, like your shirts or your pants, I mean, they get hemmed on the spot, so again, like, really thinking about the experience and delivering instant gratification is really something that we do incredibly well.
But the obvious issues you have is that you're not compromising earnings per share in order to be able to bring in better experience. It's the opposite.
Absolutely. And that's why the metrics have to change, right? I mean, the same store comp metrics. I mean, it's like, let's talk about guest engagement. Let's talk about guest satisfaction.
Is it a prison, the same store sales number?
It's not a prison because we've got great numbers. Okay. And I think there are metrics today that are so much more relevant to the quality of our business. In the past 2 years, what we've done is we've gone from like playing defense to playing offense again, building a culture of innovation and going back to being a design-led organization. So earlier we talked about, you know, the beautiful marriage of function and fashion. So when you look at some of our more recent products, you know, this jacquard or the maize print that's behind you, and I think that's a beautiful expression of us at our best when you've got amazing fabrics, new looks, combined with this attention to detail and this craftsmanship.
Many of these CEOs in the business tell me that things are promotional. That does not seem to be the kind of thing that you're talking about.
When we listen and when we deliver innovation, product flies off the shelf and we see very little price resistance. And that's really the focus.
How many people understand about the notion of mindfulness as a concept that millennials understand, but maybe older people think, well, that's just some sort of just razzle-dazzle?
I think we're in the very, very early phases of people understanding the value of mindfulness. I mean, I think our kids understand that so much better than we do. But science is there. It's been around for 5,000 years. And yoga and meditation, like a steady practice, actually helps rewire the brain and builds resilience in all aspects of your life.
And I want to make this point for you. The athletes are not people you pay to wear Lululemon.
We don't have endorsements. So those relationships, right. We don't have contract with appearance fees. We don't have contracts that are time-bound. I mean, it's really a relationship that is very free in some way, so that when we speak on behalf of each other, it's incredibly authentic.
And when I'm buying and I'm checking out, point of sale or?
Well, point of sweat.
Good. Baltimore, thank you so much for showing
Thanks
me around this store. Really appreciate it.
Thank you.
It is time! It's time for the lightning round! Quick, Mark Brown, around the stage, talk to the five of us, and we learn how to talk with Dan and my dad, and we will play this out! And then the lightning round is over. Are you ready, Ski Daddy? And it's time for the lightning round! Quick, I'm going to start with Brian in Oregon. Brian!
Yeah, how you doing, Jim?
Good, I'm talking to someone where my daughter lives. I love Oregon. How can I help?
Oh, my question is, what do you think about AMD, Advanced Micro Devices?
I think Anthony did that equity offering. They fixed the balance sheet. I'm a buyer, not a seller. Everyone's turned on that one. That's wrong. How about Gene in Massachusetts? Gene!
Hey, Jim, a big New England bouillon from the Berkshires in Massachusetts.
Oh, so beautiful up there. I love it. I love the way the leaves change color stuff. You know, the women like that, too. What's up?
Oh, yeah. Jim, I recently purchased Bluebird Bio, BLUE.
Now, you're dealing with speculation there, Gene. You got to know if there's no takeover bid, you're going to give up that premium. Now, I was talking to Bruce Kamich, who does the chart work over with me at realmoney.com. A lot of these look good, but just be aware, they're speculative and they're up a lot since the Medivation deal. I need to go to Joel in my home state of Pennsylvania. Hopefully, he is not a Steeler fan. Joel!
No, I'm a Vikings fan.
Well, that doesn't help
either.
What, you decide to, like, follow Sam Bradford to fight to Minnesota? What's up?
Anyway, Jim, thanks for taking my call. I want to know what your opinion is on Enterprise Products Partners.
I like EPT. It's got a steady dividend. It's got really, it's probably the best management in the industry. And I think, yes, it's a good one. I'm in trouble. I'm in trouble with Pittsburgh. All right, let's go to Carl in Mississippi. Carl!
Big B out here for the Magnolia State for the Simple Clay King of Stocks. My stock is BZUN, BioZun.
No, that's a Chinese. The only Chinese stock they'll recommend is Alibaba. We're not going to go there. I'm sorry. That's too speculative for me. I need Jeff in New York. Jeff!
Hi, Jim. Booyah from Levittown, Long Island.
Oh, booyah!
I'm calling about silver Wheaton, which has been on
the No, we think silver just, you know, is poor man's gold. We prefer the GLD and then Randgold if we want a little exposure. I'm going now to Audrey in New York. Audrey!
Hi, Jim.
Audrey.
I want to know, I bought Ipigy. You told me it was a good stock. It seems to be going backward. What do you want me
fine.
To do?
It had a big run since it opened. It's come back a little. I like it. And that, no offense, I'm sorry, Pittsburgh. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is the conclusion of the Lightning Round!
The Lightning Round is sponsored by TD Ameritrade.
I love it. I love Bubba.
Hey, Jim, gotta get a Bubba Booey.
Bubba Booey. All right, there you go. What's up? Let's go to Ruth in Washington. Ruth! Ruth! Tim in Washington. Tim.
Hi, Jim. Thank you for picking my
phone. Of course.
This is Tim and my daughter, Sophia. She want to say hi to you.
Thank you.
Hi, Jim Kramer.
Oh, hi. Georgia bar gave me a booyah this morning.
Somebody told me to tell you booyah.
Booyah, absolutely. That was like, I was like, oh, I wanted to frame it, but it was like kind of audible, you know? What's up? The money trail starts a supersized family feud. Landing a son?
Jim, booyah!
Colts fan, booyah.
Hey, Jim, big black and gold booyah for you.
I've been looking for something to do with this tail for ages, and then I figured out what to do. What you do is you polish up the helmet for the 425 national game. I'm Jim Cramer. Just a second. I want to miss a spot right here. And I will see you tomorrow. Do with the stock of Twitter now that David Faber has broken the story of its potential sale to Salesforce.com, Alphabet, or perhaps several still unknown suitors? Well, you got a classic dilemma right now. Left to its own devices, Twitter should be lower, perhaps appreciably lower, because it doesn't have the growth, and growth is the magic elixir that's required for all tech companies to have high-flying stocks. But I've argued endlessly that if Twitter's management simply thought bigger about the company, made it easier to use, it could be so much more than a place for people just to banter back and forth. It could be the ultimate customer retention tool. In fact, it could be shy of Facebook, the best way to get in touch with and learn from and teach customers about your products and what it can mean for them in a totally positive and intelligent way. After David broke the story of the talks, a culmination of monumental reporting about what happened at a recent board meeting, critics wondered about why any company would want to pay up for Twitter with such little growth. Why buy this dog? Sure enough, my favorite follow, Vala Afshar, he's the chief digital evangelist for none other than Salesforce.com, posted the following personal note a few minutes after David broke the story. Why at Twitter? One, personal learning network. Two, the best real-time context-rich news. Three, democratized intelligence. Four, great place to promote others. Vala, who has more insight than anyone that I read on Twitter, quickly followed up that his view of Twitter is longstanding, and I certainly can appreciate that. It's totally true, and it's also his own personally. But I think he is spot on in these. These are all good reasons why Twitter would be a great acquisition for any company trying to build a 360-degree, 24/7 relationship with its customers. There are all the reasons why a Microsoft or an Oracle or a Verizon, a Salesforce, an SAP or an Alphabet should be IBM should be interested in acquiring the company, although the run today makes any potential transaction very costly to the buyer. What is the radical decline in Salesforce.com's stock today? It was down more than 5% on the mere suggestion that it might buy Twitter. I make no secret of how much I believe in Twitter's potential, and I'm constantly trying to suggest that the company needs to think bigger. Did that last time I was watching a football game. I wanted Twitter to hook up with the likes of J.P. Morgan. I'm using them as an example, so that when I use my credit card in Mexico, I don't have to call customer service and tell them, yes, stop blocking me. It is me. I am here. No one stole my card. I have to make that embarrassing phone call and butt in front of my kids a bunch of times. You may have to have made it when you travel. A simple direct message to me from them about whether I'm really there would have solved the problem. That's customer retention. Twitter knows more about me than just about anyone other than my wife. And if you include my fanatical sports side, then my wife's a close second. That's how much they've seen and heard from my tweets, particularly my occasionally combative, feisty ones that my daughter and my wife hate. But I don't care. There was some trash talker to the Eagles this morning. You think I'm just going to sit back and let that happen on my watch? You think I'm not going to find that guy on the Sunday game, the national game at 425, and anyway, at least right now, Twitter does not take advantage of the treasure trove of information that they have. They make it too hard to get on board. They don't mine. They don't examine. They don't think about what it could mean for targeted advertising like I do. That's why I said I wanted to be the CEO, but I got a lot of other jobs. Now, the companies being bandied about as possible acquirers all understand this, even if Twitter's current management doesn't see it as clearly. But everything comes at a price, and buying Twitter at these levels will crater the acquirer's earnings for at least several years while the business is fixed to bring in the kind of revenue that I believe it can generate. So if you own Twitter, the stock, understand that it's in rarefied territory. And I'm thinking it's 4 or 5 points up and three down if nothing materializes. Now, this is tough to get behind because it really can be only recommended on a takeover basis. And on Mad Money, you know our rules. If the fundamentals don't support the valuation, we are not going to recommend it on a takeover. But Twitter's worth a great deal to the visionaries. Visionaries like the must-follow Vala Afshar, who sees Twitter not just for what it is now, but for what it is meant to be. Stick with Kramer. Remember, David Faber said nothing imminent, Twitter, so be patient if you want something. By the way, speaking of patience, don't trade Apple, own it. Everyone's freaking out again. Oh, please. I like to say there's always a bull market somewhere. Promise I'll find it just for you right here on Mad Money. I'm Jim Cramer, and I will see you Monday.